February 7th. It's 4:35 p.m. Will the meeting of the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee please come to order? My name is Max Groenberg. I'll be chairing the hearing. Present with me here this afternoon, our co-chairman, Nilo Kopanen, Representative Katie Hurley, Representative Robin Taylor, Representative Fritz Pettyjohn, and Representative David Thompson. The subject of the legislation before us is House Concurrent Resolution 2 and House Bills 67 and 88, all dealing with protection of children. We should have a number of stations on the line, and we're going to be taking testimony this afternoon. There are some people who need to testify before 5 o'clock, and I'd like to take them first. The first witness we have is the public defender, Dana Fabe in Anchorage. Ms. Fabe, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Are you ready to proceed? Please do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, I am Dana Fabe, public defender for Alaska. I'm going to start with the hearsay issues that are contained both in HB 88 and HB 67, since those are the issues in common for both of these bills. I'll start with the grand jury
testimony, but I think that it's a wise time to let people ask questions now. Representative Thompson. Stand by. The committee will be at ease for just a minute. I'm, again, this is the House Yes Committee. I'm Max Gruenberg. Dana, Betty, this is testifying. Dana, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Pettijohn's in the process of questioning. All right. Yes, finish.
Representative Pettijohn. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
the use of television, a videotape, I think probably what you're referring to is on the books is a statute which allows a videotape deposition to possibly be introduced at trial under certain circumstances. The deposition situation would be a different one because you would have a defense attorney there questioning, being able to cross-examine, and it would simply be conducted as the same way a trial is. However, that whole tape would be introduced at trial rather than having the live
then I think some of the other committee members may have additional questions. You're familiar, of course, with that Alaska Criminal Rule 6R, are you not, dealing with the admissibility of hearsay evidence in the grand jury? House Bill 88, the governor's bill, dealing with the admissibility of grand jury hearsay. And I'm referring specifically to the new proposed subsection AS 12.40.055, specifically the definition of unavailable, which is really at the heart of your comments, is it not? Just so I would isolate those the kinds of provisions. Under the present Rule 6R, the court would have the discretion to require the presence of the child, would it not? How would that determination be made under present law as to whether hearsay evidence would be permissible before the grand jury? Would that be made before the grand jury, or would it be made after the grand jury in the suppression hearing?
The latter.
Is there any present mechanism for a determination to be made in advance of the grand jury so that the people wouldn't have to re-indict, so the prosecution wouldn't have to re-indict?
Not that I'm aware of from Representative Tucker.
Do you think it might be a good idea for us somewhere, either in this bill or something else, to provide some kind of a mechanism so that difficult questions like this could be determined in advance of the grand jury, thus expediting the whole case?
I think that might be a very good idea, just because even if this bill goes in as is, you're right that the unavailability section is going to be the issue. In other words, we get a grand jury transcript that shows that the child has not testified. The prosecutor will probably go on the record and say, and the reason he's not testifying is under
that's just a thought.
Interesting idea, Mr. Chairman. I think it would be something perhaps worth pursuing.
Possibly, at some point, the elected vendor would like to suggest some possible language on that, and the committee would be happy to look at it. I realize you've got other testimony you want to give, and I know that Representative Copeland has additional questions to ask, but I have no further questions at this time, Representative Copeland.
I think that there are therapists who feel that they do have
know you have to go. We have others who wish to testify, and thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you for letting me testify.
Next witness who wished to testify before 5 was, I'm sorry for running behind, was, I believe, Kenneth Covey from Kodiak. Is that correct? Was that the proper witness who wished to testify before 5? Is there any other location where anybody has a time constraint? I'll take that person first. Otherwise, I'm just going to go in the order people signed up. Hearing none, I'm going to start first with Barrow. I understand that there is someone who wishes to testify anonymously. Is there an anonymous witness there? Please have her just start the last again. She faded out. thing. Is there anything else you wish to add, ma'am, before I open this up for questions?
No.
Are there any questions by any members of the committee? Thank you very much, ma'am. We also have another witness from Barrow, I understand, and that's Linda Wingenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Wingenbaum, the approach to the microphone.
Good evening. My name is Linda Wingenbaum. I'm with Alaska Legal Services in Barrow, Alaska. I've been an attorney here in Barrow with Legal Services for almost 4 years now. A good deal of my job is the representation of people involved in child and youth abuse proceedings. I have in the past represented parents, been appointed guardian ad litem for children, and have basically dealt with this issue from several different angles. Although my association is mostly in the civil law instead of the criminal law, I have several problems with this bill, but because of the time constraints, I'd like to address myself to the major problems with the bill.
By the way, Ms. Wingenbaum, were you aware that Mark Regan testified extensively yesterday?
Yes, I do understand that. Mark and I both talked about the testimony that he gave. Mine will speak to some of the same issues, but raise a few different points.
I'd appreciate it if you could keep your testimony and each of the other witnesses to under 5 minutes each. Otherwise, we won't complete our examinations today, and we will be glad to accept.
Which changes the reporting requirements on predisposition reports from 2 to 10 days. I know you've heard from Mark Regan about that, and you've just heard from the other witness here in Barrow concerning that.
We heard extensive testimony on that point yesterday. If you have anything to add to Mark, I'd be happy to take it. But we heard a lot about that yesterday.
Well, I'd just like to point out that the governor's transmittal letter seems to indicate that the predisposition report only impacts children who are considered delinquent children. This is not true. Any child who is in an adjudication proceeding, such as a child in need of aid, also requires to have a predisposition report. The structure of this particular section, I think, points out some of the major problems with the laws dealing with children, both the laws and the rules of court. They seem to be written addressing certain problems involved with delinquent children, forgetting the fact that the same laws and procedures apply to children who are not part of who have not violated any laws, but are simply being adjudicated children in need of aid. On section 14, deals with emergency hearings. Again, I understand Mark Regan also made comments on the section 14 changing the time limits on the first hearings for following an emergency custody.
He testified extensively on that.
Well, I strongly object to any change that would reduce the amount of time between a child being removed from home and the initial hearing. Currently, DFYS is required to file a petition within 12 hours, and within 48 hours after that, there's required to be a hearing. By changing the 12-hour requirement to a 24-hour requirement, plus another 48 hours before a hearing, a child could be picked up on Friday morning and have no hearing to determine the validity of that removal until Wednesday. That is very objectionable. Also, to not have time constraints on when the family is to be notified, I think, would result in delay of notice to the family. And those are the major points. Because of the shortness of time, I will cut my testimony here. I would like to make just one general comment on the bill, and that is the bill seems to be addressing increasing regulation and increasing punishment for certain behavior when, in order to resolve the problem of child abuse and child sexual abuse, we should be directed more towards rehabilitation, reunifying the family. The purpose of child in need of aid statutes, according to LAM versus State, is to reintegrate the child back into the family. This bill seems to be divisive.
Ms. Wingenbach, thank you very much. I just have one question here before I turn it over to the other members of the committee. You folks in Barrow have the PD contract as well as your own civil caseload, right?
No, that is not true.
Then your involvement in this is from the point of view of representing in the civil a child in need of aid cases, or do you get involved in the criminal prosecutions?
Sometimes we are appointed guardians ad litem when the children are in the criminals or are victims or been charged with violating a crime. We will sometimes appear as guardian ad litem. We do not represent anyone in the criminal field, no.
Do you anticipate, and I'm really asking you this on behalf of legal services, but I'm not asking you to take an official position if you can't. Does legal services anticipate this legislation would have a major impact on their caseload statewide or in any location, including Barrow?
It would have a major impact on our caseload in that the controversies in court will be increased because of the changes in the timeline and having to go in and ask for continuances if our predisposition reports are given to us 2 days before a hearing.
I understand. I'd like to turn this over to other members of the committee for questions. Representative Kopanen. Representative Taylor.
No, thank you.
Representative Hurley.
No, that's fine.
Thank you once again for testifying at our request. Next a witness we have is from Barrow, Ruth Lister. Are you available?
Barrow?
Fairbanks. I'm sorry, Fairbanks.
Fairbanks,
excuse me.
Ruth Lister. Ruth
Lister is in Fairbanks.
Yes, this is Ruth Lister in Fairbanks, and I'm the Director of Women in Crisis, which is the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Program in Fairbanks. And I wanted to testify just on a couple of sections. One was on the reporting, thinking that, this is on page nine, that under reporting by school personnel, thinking it might be better to have school teachers, school administrative staff member, and other personnel of public and private schools who have caretaking responsibilities. I think that it is good to have a number of different groups of people reporting on child sexual abuse. It's also necessary that those people be given some information on how to report and on identification. And so it would be good here to limit it to the school personnel who actually see the children, not like the janitor or somebody like that. Another area was on page nine, I think it is section 17. My understanding of this whole section is that if it's within the family incest that you report to DHSS, and if you suspect child sexual abuse by somebody who isn't in a caretaking responsibility to the child, then you report to law enforcement. If you can't report to law enforcement, then you should report to DHSS. Is that correct?
I've got Gail Horetsky here from the Attorney General's office, and she's nodding her head. Ms. Horetsky, is that correct?
That is correct.
She says that is correct, ma'am.
My suggestion might be that from what I've seen sometimes in villages, it's more difficult sometimes to get a hold of DHSS, and that it might be good to put in a clause similar to the one that you put in under the reporting for outside the family, put in another clause where you're saying reporting of incest in the family, saying that if you can't reach DHSS, then report to your closest law enforcement. Because often there is substantial and ongoing danger to the child, and if it seems to have taken a long time to reach somebody from the department, it would be good to say that you should make every effort to reach an alternative source of protection to the child, and in this case, that would be law enforcement.
I understand. Ms. Horetsky would like to add something on that, and she's approaching the microphone now. Ms. Horetsky, you have to flip the toggle.
Shove down on the black one.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Gail Horetsky with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. The present witness is quite accurate in that that is the way it ought to operate, and that's a good idea. I just want to inform for the committee's information and for her information that that language presently does now exist in Title 47 under the section that requires reporting of
This is Ruth Lister of Fairbanks. Again, I'm not hearing Ms. Horetzky.
You shoved down to the black bar.
You got to get closer. Yeah. Closer.
See if
Ms.
she can
Lister,
hear
I just wanted to let you know that present Title 47, which does require the reporting of abuse that's a result of a caretaker, does contain the provision that you're suggesting, which is if you're not able to immediately notify DFYS personnel, that the report then be made to local law enforcement officers. That's an excellent idea, and it is already in the statute.
Well, it's there, I suppose. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did. Thank you. Okay, there was another couple of points I wanted to make. I had some difficulty, maybe she could clarify this, in understanding, this is on page 11, how the protective injunctions are going to work. I'm assuming that this is something that you would do as a person who is not on bail and not on probation, in which case you could limit them in any way you wanted. And my feeling is that because it might be difficult to work something like this, that I would suggest that you make an amendment that would increase the allowable probation for sexual offenses from 5 to 10 years, so that in those cases after the man leaves jail, knowing the very high incidence of reoffense and the great difficulty that there really is in rehabilitation and treatment, that there would at least be some way of continuing protection for the child or for children after the man leaves jail.
Ms. Horetzky, did you wish to respond to that?
I think that's a good idea.
She says she thinks that's a good idea. Before we go on, there's one question that comes to mind. Ms. Horetzky, does this provision here, Section 22 of the bill, require that the bill be termed an amendment to Alaska Civil Rule 65? If so, does that require a technical amendment to the bill? Does this section amend Rule 65, do you know?
Are you
Civil
talking
rule?
About the section that deals with injunctions?
Right. Does that, I don't need an answer now, but if it has the effect of amending Civil Rule 65, we need to have that in the title and a specific statement to that effect in the bill. Would you check that out for us?
I certainly do that.
Ms. Lister, please continue if you haven't completed.
Those are the only suggestions I had for changes. I'm in support of the hearsay part of the bill, and I know there's been a certain amount of testimony against it. I would come out strongly in support of it.
Thank you very much. Any questions from any members of the committee? Representative Copeland?
No questions, but I would suggest sending down some written backup for the committee to work with.
Representative Taylor? Representative Hurley?
No.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lister. The next witness we have is Tammy McIntyre from Wasilla. Are you there, ma'am?
Yeah, I'm here, but Lynn's here. I was going to testify for her. She would like to testify now if she can.
Fine. Once again, I don't have her on the list. We are limiting all witnesses to 5 minutes maximum so that we can complete all the witnesses from around the state. Would you please state your name and whom you represent, ma'am?
My name is Tammy McIntyre, and I'm representing Lynette
Drumbarger.
They've already got her full.
We have Ms. Drumbarger's extensive written testimony already. Is there anything you wish to add to that?
Yes, this is Lynette Drumbarger. And yes, I do wish to add something to that if I can. This is a lot shorter.
Yes, ma'am. Please, 5 minutes if possible. Go ahead.
Okay, I'd like to say I listened. I requested a tape copy of the teleconference yesterday. And I agree with Monty Slusher of Barrow with his comments on rehabilitation. My comments are limited only to incest because by definition it is sexual assault or sexual molesting that occurs within the family and therefore a much more delicate and difficult problem. My previous testimony has already explained the difference between sexual assault and incest.
But I would like to additionally mention that whereas you are protecting families as well as children in your laws against sexual assault, you are destroying families by splitting them up when it comes to incest. I think my Slusher is right that more needs to be done towards rehabilitation. The testimony by Frances pretty scared me because although I realize she's a lot more knowledgeable and well-educated than I am, I don't understand why she is so thrilled at requiring every possible person you can think of to have to report it. I think that Monty made a really good point. He said, I feel that many people think that they can trust the minister, so they go to one for help, for advice and counsel. The minute they leave, the minister calls the cops, and I think that that's, like he says, it's going to scare people away that are maybe on the verge of child abuse, and they need help, they need assistance because they're worried about themselves or somebody else, and then they go to someone they can trust and they're betrayed. And I think that it's going to happen like he says. I think that there are going to be less and less people that are going to be willing to get the help that they need. The first letter I wrote to Katie Hurley discussed exactly that, because I had thought of that also, that people were going to be afraid to report it. Families who want to stay together are not going to report it once they become aware of the existing law. I would say again that I'm referring to incest, not sexual assault. I back very tough laws on sexual assault and also tougher laws on repeaters of incest. I am speaking only of first-time offenders who would rather be in a treatment program and getting help than being in jail and staying away from their family. And I'd also like to say that in jail, a lot of these people are not getting treatment anyway. They just sit there and watch TV, and they're costing the state lots and lots and lots of money. By using mandatory counseling and strict probation, as I suggested in the testimony you received yesterday, I think you could successfully monitor the molesters so that the acts are not repeated. The family is preserved, and the people who would be afraid to come and get help under the present law to be willing to. Quoting from some research done by a friend of mine, and this is a direct quote, according to Pam Kirk, counselor, Human Relations Center, Anchorage, 30 female victims have said they would not have reported their fathers had they known he would face an 8-year jail sentence for what he has done, unquote. And some of these fathers are facing 15 years, and the victim was molested, not raped, and yet rapists are getting out in 8 years or less. How many more spouses and victims are going to hide it, and the acts are going to be repeated over and over again and never monitored, and counseling and help never received because of your present law? I hope that you clearly understand that I in no way condone child abuse, incest, or sexual assault, but I feel that you should find an alternative method so that families can be helped, not threatened and split up. I understand that in Oregon they have a law that requires that after someone is a molester, they are immediately placed in a treatment program for 4 years. After that, the case is taken to court to determine what sort of progress has been made, if they are capable of rehabilitation. I listened to Mr. Schuster's testimony on the tape many times, and I believe that this is the kind of thing that he supports. I'm impressed with the intent of the law of the proposed law, HB 88, lines 23 to 27, but I don't think that it provides for that intent. The intent is great. You want to preserve families. I think that's commendable, but I don't think the way the rest of the law is written that it does that. I also wanted to comment on Ms. Jepson's suggestion about the age of the victim. I agree with her that a more reasonable approach would be to have a child psychologist or a counselor evaluate the severity of each case. I realize this is going to take more time and cost a bit, but it's not going to cost nearly as much as it is to keeping these people in jail. I don't think that age should be used as a factor in determining severity of cases, but that instead it should be dependent on what occurred, the extent of the physical and emotional harm, and the attitude of the molester. If the molester recognizes that he needs help and is willing to submit to a treatment program, he should be granted that. And I'd like to close my remarks with another quote. This is from Douglas Bisharp, who was quoted in a report by Henry Giaretto, who is the director of Child Sexual Abuse Treatment Program, Juvenile Probation Department in San Jose, California. And he says, quote, only with the application of objective and enlightened policies can treatment, research, prevention, and education be successfully performed. And I really agree with that.
Thank you very much, Ms. Drumberger. Are there any questions from any members of the committee? Hearing none, thank you again. The next witness we have is Michael Roberts from Seward. Are you there, Mr. Roberts?
Yes, it's Michael Robinson, and I wish to talk briefly about HCR number 2, that is the resolution, that is up for consideration, is that correct?
Yes, it is, Mr. Robinson.
Okay, just briefly, I am the community schools coordinator here for Seward Elementary and Seward High School, but I will be speaking today as the building representative for the classified employees. The classified employees are the custodians, the secretaries, and also some of the non-certificated employees of the school district. While we wholeheartedly support the taking of steps to ensure the protection of our young people, we are concerned about the vagueness, particularly the vagueness of this resolution at hand. Some of the questions that the classified employees have are in the areas of how will their checks be made, if they will be made. Will employees have to sign waivers allowing these checks to be made? Will there be fingerprinting? And who actually will be doing the checking themselves? We are concerned that there might be some sort maybe a witch hunt of some sort, or that perhaps the school district officials could go beyond the bounds unless they are strictly placed into some sort of resolution stating exactly how far they can go. We are definitely concerned about the problem. There have been a number of situations throughout the state over the past year or so and throughout the nation, and we certainly would do everything we possibly can to help resolve it, but we just want to make sure that the situation doesn't go beyond the bounds of protecting the rights of the people who work for the school districts also. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Are there questions from any members of the committee? Representative Taylor.
We have a bill presently pending in the House, Mr. Robinson, that will require that all people who wish to become attorneys in this state shall be fingerprinted. Do you feel that that should also be applied as concerns teachers?
I'm not a teacher, and I don't represent the teachers, but if I could ask you this, does that bill also apply to people who will become state representatives and state senators and also other state employees?
No, but I love your point, and I think that it should. If we're going to go after the lawyers, I think we ought to go after everybody else, too. I think my advice would be let's put it on the driver's license and hunting licenses, and we'll probably get everybody that way.
We do take a lot of mug shots of candidates.
As long as we make it fair and don't target lawyers or school employees or anyone in particular, I think if it covers everyone, it's not a blanketed diamond that way.
I was just going to say welcome to the club.
Thank you.
That, by the way, was Representative Taylor and Representative Kopenick. Any other questioning by any member of the committee? Hearing none.
Chair.
Pardon me?
Chair.
Hearing none, is there any other witness from any place in the state who has not yet testified who'd like to do so?
Excuse me, this is Gracie Bethel. My participant is here to testify.
Would he or she please step forward? State their name, spell their last name, give us the group they're representing. We are attempting to limit testimony, direct testimony, to 5 minutes, and then I'll open it up for questioning.
My name is Rosemary Porter, P-O-R-T-E-R, and I'm the president of Bethel Social Services. It's a private nonprofit corporation who runs locally here a daycare, an infant care center, a residential care facility, infant learning program, and a program for developmental disabilities. I will speak just briefly to all of the bills in question. First, on HCR2, the corporation is definitely in favor of not only encouraging all local school districts, but we're suggesting that you may want to add administrators and also child care centers. On HB67, I believe there is compelling justification for admitting hearsay evidence in the grand jury, and the prejudice is minimal when this sort of thing happens, and it happens all the time in federal grand jury proceedings, and there's precedence in many other states for admitting hearsay evidence into the grand jury testimony. On HB 88, we are very much in favor of number 3, which would include, I'm assuming, all persons employed in a position of authority over children would include daycare centers or any child care center as well as schools. And on number 5, expanding those required to report suspected child abuse, we are very much in favor of that, and creating civil fines to enforce child licensing laws, as long as this doesn't become a bureaucratic nightmare, as long as there are provisions for people who are already licensed and not making it completely a burdensome thing. On number seven, changes in the standard when the state can assume emergency custody of a child, it's a very good idea. The problem with so many of these good ideas that get put into legislation is that if they're not adequately funded, they're, of course, not going to be enforced, and that's something that we face all the time. So if indeed this is going to be part of the legislation, it should be backed up by some money. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Porter. I'm not certain that I tracked each of those numbered sections that you were referring to. I'd ask the staff, did you all track that?
Yes.
They say they did. Fine. Okay. Good. Are there any questions by any members of the committee? Hearing none, I'd like to thank you, Ms. Porter. Is there any other witness from around the state who has not yet testified and would like to do so at this time?
Is there anybody left out there?
Is there anyone here in Juneau that would like to do so? Fine. Hearing no other, yes, there is. Would you please come forward? This gentleman is from Juneau. Give us your name, spell your last name, and indicate the group you're representing. We're having a five-minute limit, you've heard.
Push the toggle switch.
Now talk.
Ready.
Go ahead.
My name is Frank Barthel. Last name is B-A-R-T-H-E-L. I work with the Division of Family and Youth Services, and basically the only thing I wanted to address was the person in Barrow raised the issue of reporting. It was an unfamily abusive situation. Reporting to the police would be a hardship. The division's position on that is that we have so many abusive situations being reported within families, and it's very difficult, given the resources we have, to take care of that matter, that if we had the additional reporting of non-family members abusing children, that we could not handle that workload. And so we thought it was just for the police to take those reports. And if there was no police there, then the Division of Family Youth Services would take that. The one other thing I'd like to say to the committee is that there's been some discussion on the two-day reporting. If the committee so wishes, I can have someone within the division write a position paper on that to clarify that.
Definitely. Please do.
Okay, I think we've already had it. I think we had somebody here. Connie Seip was here, and she told us about it. And
I think that just so that there is no question, I don't...
No reason for additional work to be done. Those
yeah, we have it.
I don't recall. I would appreciate it if you can do it with a minimum of additional time. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Would you flip your talks again? Are there any questions of Mr. Barthel?
I'd just like to thank you for his patience.
Yeah, your patience.
You have some questions? Okay. Is there any testimony from anywhere else in the state? Fine. We will... Yes, is there somebody else who wants to testify?
Yes, this is Dr. George Brown up in the Matsu Valley. I just got in from a meeting, and I want to speak to Senate Bill 88. I believe it's House Bill 18.
He's got them backwards.
Yes. We understand it's House Concurrent Resolution...
Two.
And House Bills 67 and 88. Those are the bills that we're dealing with today. Are those the bills you wish to testify to, Doctor?
House Bill 88, I can. There is one other House Bill, but apparently it's a different number. Can I go ahead and start now?
Please do. Would you please tell us the group you're representing? And we're attempting to limit direct testimony to 5 minutes, and then I'll open it up for questioning of the committee.
Yes. I'm a pediatrician, and I'll say the group I'm representing is children, primarily. I have worked in the area of child abuse and child protection for over 10 years. And number one, I'd like to say if the House Bill 88 is passed as it is written, it would be a big improvement for children in the state of Alaska. Number two, I think that it would be even more important to be certain that appropriations to provide the kind of child protection this bill could offer is even more important. And if you cannot be certain that some appropriations services are provided, then I would not take the time to pass the bill. Number three, in some specific areas, on page 1, line 15, I would like to know if it is 10 years or 18 years. I would suggest that it be 10 years on the basis of my experience, as I understand that section of the bill. On page 1, line 17 and line 27, I would like to see a definition of the word substantial. On page 8, line 20, I would like to see a definition of the word mental injury. I have never seen a case of physical abuse or sexual abuse in which there had not already been a significant amount of emotional abuse. And yet that's a very difficult area, and I think it's very important that be defined as clearly as it can be. On page 9, line 20, I would like to know whether the Division of Family and Youth Services is included under the meaning of law enforcement agencies. In other words, is the reporting of all suspected child abuse to go to the Department of Law, or can it go to the Department of Health and Social Services? And in closing, I would like to point out something that has been written by Dr. Henry Kemp, which I think we all need to remember all the time, and that is that society's response to the problem of child abuse has never erred so much in the area of trying to deal with the offender. It has always erred more in the area of not providing enough treatment for the children and the people supporting them, and that providing treatment can really prevent future problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor. Before turning it over to the rest of the committee, your comment on page 8, line 20, defining mental injury, that already is defined in the bill, sir. If you would refer back to page 12, line 11, which is the new AS 47.17.070, subsection 10. I think that may answer that particular question.
About the 10, he asked about the 10-year-old or 18, which is it?
Thank you. I just missed that when I read through it.
That's okay. It's a complicated bill. Representative Hurley.
Dr. Brown, you mentioned that you didn't know whether it was 18 or 10. The present law is 10, as I understand it, and they're changing it to 18, proposing to change it to 18, and your testimony is echoed by several other people that it should be 10.
I would feel more comfortable if it was 16, but again, I think a lot of that depends on the definition of the word substantial.
Any other questions from any other members of the committee? Representative Taylor.
Doctor, you said you've been working in this field for 10 years. Has that work been in the state of Alaska?
Yes.
Most of it has, yes, sir.
Were you familiar with the protocols set up by Department of Health and Social Services involving sexual abuse offenders prior to 1980?
I was not working from 1975 to 78 in this state, and was not involved much in sexual abuse before 81 or 82, so I'm not familiar with that.
Do you have any comments as concerns the 8-year mandatory sentencing requirements as now provided by law and how that may affect your ability to work with the victims?
Yes, I have a couple of fairly strong feelings about that. And first I would say that we need to always remember when we make laws and pass laws that we're dealing with human beings. And that means that, particularly in our country, which prides itself on individual rights, that we should do our best to always treat persons as individuals. And for that reason, I feel there should be some latitude to the judge and to professionals involved in dealing with this, and would therefore be against mandatory or automatic presumptive sentence of any kind.
You said you had a couple of thoughts. Did you have another comment on that same subject, sir?
I think the other one is somewhat repetitive, but I think it's worth saying. 20 years ago, when the country began to deal with physical abuse, we felt very frustrated, but because of continued efforts by many, many people, we've demonstrated you can prevent a lot of that by having services available. We're now in the same era with sexual abuse, and I think the same basic idea will hold if we for children to say, if you're sexually abused, you report it and we'll help you. We've got to make sure we keep doing that, and that means providing treatment, because if we don't, those children are going to go back, or offenders are going to come back and make it worse for them later on. We have to be willing to find federal, state, local, and private money, and to make sure we can have local teen treatment and really help families who are in this kind of trouble.
Thank you very much, Doctor. I appreciate your comments. Any other questions by any other committee members? Is there anyone else from around the state who wishes to testify? Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all. I'm adjourning it. It's now 6 o'clock.